Then the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites came near to Eleazar the priest, to Joshua the son of Nun, and to the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the children of Israel. And they spoke to them at Shiloh in the land of Canaan, saying, Yahweh commanded through Moses to give us cities to dwell in, with their common lands for our livestock. So the children of Israel gave to the Levites from their inheritance, at the commandment of Yahweh, these cities and their common lands. Now the lot came out for the families of the Kohathites, and the children of Aaron the priest, who were of the Levites, had 13 cities by lot from the tribe of Judah, from the tribe of Simeon, and from the tribe of Benjamin. The rest of the children of Kohath had 10 cities by lot from the families of the tribe of Ephraim, from the tribe of Dan, and from the half-tribe of Manasseh. And the children of Gershon had 13 cities by lot from the families of the tribe of Issachar, from the tribe of Asher, from the tribe of Naphtali, and from the half-tribe of Manasseh in Bashan. The children of Merari, according to their families, had 12 cities from the tribe of Reuben, from the tribe of Gad, and from the tribe of Zebulun. And the children of Israel gave these cities with their common lands by lot to the Levites, as Yahweh had commanded by the hand of Moses. And then down to verse 41. All the cities of the Levites within the possession of the children of Israel were 48 cities with their common lands. Every one of these cities had its own common land surrounding it. Thus were all these cities. So Yahweh gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. Yahweh gave them rest all around, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers, and not a man of all their enemies stood against them. Yahweh delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word failed of any good thing which Yahweh had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Please be seated. Last time, a few weeks back, we considered the assignment of the cities of refuge throughout the land. And tonight we'll examine the assignment of the Levitical cities. All six of the cities of refuge are counted among the Levitical cities, which totaled 48 in all. And to set the stage for this, we're going to consider biblical background about the Levites and then dive into Joshua 21. So our outline will be, first of all, Levites, biblical background. Secondly, Levites claim their cities in verses 1 through 8. And Yahweh shown to be faithful in verses 43 through 45. We begin with Levites, the biblical background. And here we'll be looking at quite a few passages prior to Joshua in the Old Testament. The origin of the special role of the tribe of Levi may be traced back to their faithfulness to Moses during the incident of the golden calf. You'll recall that when Moses came down from Mount Sinai, he discovered the people dancing around a golden calf, which they had fashioned out of gold, they said, as a god to lead them. And we read Moses' response in Exodus 32. Let me read 26 through 28. Then Moses stood in the entrance of the camp and said, "Whoever is on Yahweh's side, come to me." And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. And he said to them, "Thus says Yahweh, God of Israel, let every man put his sword on his side and go in and out from the entrance to entrance throughout the camp, and let every man kill his brother, every man his companion, and every man his neighbor." So the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. The tribe of Levi proved faithful in this grisly test of faithfulness to Yahweh. On that day, they were consecrated, they were set apart for blessing. Now, this setting apart also is related to the redemption of the firstborn sons in Israel. Children, anybody remember what the final plague was in Egypt? Killing of the firstborn. That was the firstborn sons of Egypt as well as the firstborn of the animals. The firstborn of Israel were spared when they put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost so that the angel of death would pass over them. That's the origin of the Passover feast. Nevertheless, the firstborn still belonged to the Lord. We read in Exodus 13, 1 through 2, "Then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, 'Consecrate to me all the firstborn. Whatever opens the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and beast, it is mine.' And so the Lord said, while he did not kill the firstborn in Israel because of the blood of the lamb, nevertheless, he said, the firstborn all belonged to him. But later he determined that the firstborn sons in Israel could be redeemed from special service to him by allowing the Levites to do so in their place." We read in Numbers 3, verses 40 through 49. "Then Yahweh said to Moses, 'Number all the firstborn males of the children of Israel from a month old and above, and take the number of their names. And you shall take the Levites for me, I am Yahweh, instead of all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and the livestock of the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the livestock of the children of Israel.' So Moses numbered all the firstborn among the children of Israel as Yahweh commanded him. And all the firstborn males, according to the number of names from a month old and above, of those who were numbered of them, were 22,273. Very specific. Then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, 'Take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the children of Israel, and the livestock of the Levites instead of their livestock. The Levites shall be mine. I am Yahweh. And for the redemption of the 273 of the firstborn of the children of Israel, who are more than the number of the Levites, you shall take 5 shekels for each one individually. You shall take them in the currency of the shekel of the sanctuary, the shekel of 20 gerahs, and you shall give the money with which the excess number of them is redeemed to Aaron and his sons." And so there's a principle of substitution at work here. All the firstborn sons of Israel are counted, and the Levites are able to serve in their place. And there's 200 some more than there are Levites, and so there's a price that can be paid for the redemption of them. And so from that time forward, the Levites were specially set aside for service to Yahweh in place of the firstborn of all Israel. Now, there's a number of passages that outline specific responsibilities of the Levites. What did it mean for them to be consecrated to the Lord? What was it that they were to do? And we'll sort of list some of these things up here. First of all, Deuteronomy 10, verse 8. "At that time, Yahweh separated the tribe of Levi to bear the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, to stand before Yahweh, to minister to him, and to bless in his name in that day." And so some of the duties of the Levites included bearing the Ark of the Covenant and ministering before Yahweh, which would be in a context of worship. Let's see. We've got several more passages we want to look at here. Numbers 1, 49 to 51. "Only the tribe of Levi you shall not number, nor take a census of them among the children of Israel, but you shall appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony, over all its furnishings, and over all things that belong to it. They shall carry the tabernacle and all its furnishings. They shall attend to it and camp around the tabernacle. And when the tabernacle is to go forward, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle is to be set up, the Levites shall set it up. The outsider who comes near shall be put to death." And so they are to transport, set up, take down,
the tabernacle.
They are also to guard the tabernacle, to put to death any outsiders that would come into the holy space of the tabernacle. And then Numbers 3, 5 through 8. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "Bring the tribe of Levi near and present them before Aaron the priest, that they may serve him. And they shall attend to his needs and the needs of the whole congregation before the tabernacle of meeting to do the work of the tabernacle. Also they shall attend to all the furnishings of the tabernacle of meeting and to the needs of the children of Israel to do the work of the tabernacle." And here we're told that the Levites are to serve under Aaron. What was Aaron's job title? He was the priest. He was the high priest in Israel. And this is something that we should remember. All priests were Levites. Not all Levites were priests. The Levites were one of the 12 tribes in Israel. And within the tribe of Levi, it was those who were the descendants of Aaron who were set aside for the priesthood. So only those in the family of Aaron were qualified to be priests. But the rest of the tribe of Levi were to serve under Aaron, to serve the priest, and had various responsibilities related to the worship life of Israel. And then Leviticus 10, verses 10 and 11. "That you may distinguish between holy and unholy, between what is clean and unclean, and that you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which Yahweh has spoken to them by the hand of Moses." Now this is spoken to Aaron, and it seems in this context to be specifically focused upon the priests, but they were to be engaged in what we could call ritual judgment, to distinguish between clean and unclean. Those were categories that were central to the worship life of Israel, but they were also to teach the law. And we know from other passages in the Old Testament that not only the priests were to teach the law, but this was a responsibility of the Levites generally. And as we'll see a little bit later, probably one of their most significant responsibilities. And so, they had quite a few duties: bearing the Ark of the Covenant, ministering before the Lord, transporting, setting up, taking the tabernacle down, guarding the tabernacle, serving under Aaron, serving the priests, engaging in ritual judgment, and teaching the law in Israel. Another thing that set the Levites apart was that they had no inheritance in the land like the other tribes did. Numbers 18, 20 through 24. "Then Yahweh said to Aaron, 'You shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work which they perform, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. Hereafter, the children of Israel shall not come near the tabernacle of meeting, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall perform the work of the tabernacle of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations that among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer up as a heave offering to Yahweh, I have given to the Levites as an inheritance. Therefore I said to them, among the children of Israel, they shall have no inheritance.'" And here it is noted that the tithes of the people will go to the Levites as their inheritance. Deuteronomy 18 spells out how the Levites received portions of the sacrifices that were offered as their food, since they would not be having the general agricultural practices that the other tribes did. In Deuteronomy 18:2, we're told that Yahweh is their inheritance. Joshua 13:14, the sacrifices of Yahweh, God of Israel, made by fire are their inheritance. Joshua 13:33, Yahweh, God of Israel, was their inheritance. The Levites were privileged to officiate and to support the worship of Israel. And in that sense, Yahweh was their inheritance. And they were provided for as part of this worship. But while the Levites received no land allocation, as did the other tribes, they did receive places in which to dwell. And this was legislated through Moses in Numbers 35, beginning verse 1. And Yahweh spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho, saying, command the children of Israel that they give the Levites cities to dwell in from the inheritance of their possession. And you shall also give the Levites common land around the cities. They shall have the cities to dwell in, and their common land shall be for their cattle, for their herds, and for all their animals. The common land of the cities which you will give the Levites shall extend from the wall of the city outward 1,000 cubits all around. And you shall measure outside the city, on the east side 2,000 cubits, on the south side 2,000 cubits, on the west side 2,000 cubits, and on the north side 2,000 cubits. The city shall be in the middle. This shall belong to them as common land for the cities. Now among the cities which you give the Levites, you shall appoint 6 cities of refuge to which a manslayer may flee. We read about those last time. And to these you shall add 42 cities. So all the cities you will give to the Levites shall be 48. Then you shall give, these you shall give with their common land. And the cities which you give shall be from the possession of the children of Israel. From the larger tribe you shall give many. From the smaller you shall give few. Each shall give some of its cities to the Levites in proportion to the inheritance that each receives. So this tells us there were going to be 48 cities in which the Levites would dwell. 6 of them would be cities of refuge. It's quite likely that the Levites then had some significant role in the adjudication of cases of those who came to the city of refuge. And they were also given some common land around the cities for their cattle. Remember, their cattle were given to the Lord in place of the firstborn cattle from all Israel. And the cities were given based on the size of the tribes. So the larger tribes gave more, the smaller tribes gave less. So rather than own their own land, the Levites would be scattered in cities throughout the tribal allotments in Israel. And there's other texts that suggest to us that the Levites weren't the sole occupants of these cities. It's just that these cities were places where the Levites would dwell along with others within that particular tribe. And all of this traces back to Jacob's blessing, if you can call it a blessing, sort of a mixed blessing, on Levi in Genesis 49, verses 5 through 7. At the end of his life, Jacob pronounces blessings upon his 12 sons, which gives some indication of what the future holds for them. And we read in Genesis 49, starting at verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brothers, instruments of cruelty in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Now this was spoken of Simeon and Levi. And in an earlier chapter we found that Simeon did not receive a separate territory. He received certain allotted cities within the territory of Judah. By that time, the population of the tribe of Simeon was really quite small. And so they received an allotment within the broader borders of Judah. And Levi then was allotted 48 cities throughout Israel. Now back in Genesis 49, this scattering throughout Israel was said to be an act of judgment because of the anger that was shown by Simeon and Levi. And that likely refers to the incident with Dinah, where their sister Dinah had been raped. And they said they would enter into a covenant with those that had done this deed, but they required them to be circumcised. And after the men were circumcised, they took advantage of their painful situation and attacked and slaughtered them. Something that was not pleasing to the Lord, something that exceeded the appropriate penalty for their crime. And as a result of this, there was this sense of judgment on the part of Yahweh. And yet, this judgment also turned out to be a means of grace and blessing for the Levites with their worship responsibilities. Now, I've reviewed all this background to show how God's plan unfolded for the Levites, because we can sort of trace it through. There was that first blessing of Jacob, which involved judgment. And then there was the Passover, which dealt with the setting aside of the firstborn. Then there was the golden calf incident, where the Levites showed themselves to be true and faithful to the Lord. Then there was their consecration to worship as a result of their faithfulness. And then the promise of 48 cities. And what we're reading tonight in Joshua 21 is the fulfillment of that promise. And what we see here is that through these hundreds of years, the Lord was sovereignly working His plan to bless the Levites, and through the Levites in their service and worship, to bless all of Israel. There's a thread that runs through this of God's sovereign control, God's orchestration in a way that brings blessing to His people, even despite their unfaithfulness. So that gives us some background about who the Levites were, what their responsibilities were, and why it is that they were receiving these 48 cities scattered throughout the land. And that brings us to the second point tonight, and that is that the Levites claim their cities. And we get now into Joshua 21. We look at verses 1 and 2. Then the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites came near to Eleazar the priest, to Joshua the son of Nun, and to the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the children of Israel. And they spoke to them at Shiloh in the land of Canaan, saying, Yahweh commanded through Moses to give us cities to dwell in, with their common lands for our livestock. Now the narrative of the division of the land west of the Jordan River began in chapter 14 with Caleb's request to claim his inheritance in the land as the Lord had promised. And that narrative now comes to an end in chapter 21, which begins with this claim of the Levites for the cities that the Lord had promised them through Moses. And in between these two, in the midst of that narrative, we have the episode of the daughters of Zelophehad who claimed their promised inheritance in chapter 17. Framing and filling this narrative are examples of Israelite faith and Yahweh's faithfulness. He wants us to believe His promises and to act upon them. And that's what Caleb did. That's what the daughters of Zelophehad did. That's what the Levites did. In the case of the Levites, their leaders met with Eleazar the priest, Joshua, and then leaders from all the other tribes. And they met at Shiloh, and they made their request for the promised cities. And then we read in verse 3, so the children of Israel gave to the Levites from their inheritance at the commandment of Yahweh these cities and their common lands. All agreed to do this in obedience to the Lord. And the cities were determined by lot, which once again is pointing to Yahweh's sovereign control in the situation. And we read of them in verses 4 through 8. Now the lot came out for the families of the Kohathites, and the children of Aaron the priest, who were of the Levites, had 13 cities by lot from the tribe of Judah, from the tribe of Simeon, and from the tribe of Benjamin. The rest of the children of Kohath had 10 cities by lot from the families of the tribe of Ephraim, from the tribe of Dan, and from the half-tribe of Manasseh. And the children of Gershon had 13 cities by lot from the families of the tribe of Issachar, from the tribe of Asher, from the tribe of Naphtali, and from the half-tribe of Manasseh in Bashan. Then the children of Merari, according to their families, had 12 cities from the tribe of Reuben, from the tribe of Gad, and from the tribe of Zebulun. And the children of Israel gave these cities with their common lands by lot to the Levites, as Yahweh had commanded by the hand of Moses. So the cities are parceled out to the descendants of Levi's three sons. Levi had three sons, Kohath, Gershon, and Merari. And so the sons of Kohath, who were the sons of Aaron, that family line within the broader line of the Kohathites, that is, the priests, received 13 cities. And then the other sons of Kohath, that were not the priests, but were Levites generally, they received 10 cities. The Gershonites received 13 cities. The Merarites received 12 cities. And all these together add up to 48. Now, we didn't read verses 9 through 40. We won't read them now. But these specify these cities by name for the various families of Levi. And if you take your bulletin and look on the back, you can get a picture of the distribution of these cities throughout Israel. All the cities on this map are Levitical cities. And you can see that they're located all throughout the land. Now, given the responsibilities of the Levites, why would this kind of distribution make sense? What do you think? Yeah, Lana? Right, that was for the cities of refuge, and we noted that before. How about just for all the Levitical cities? Well, one of the most important responsibilities of the Levites was to teach the law. Let me read a brief excerpt from the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. The point of the Levitical cities would be to provide bases of operation so that the Levites could better infiltrate each of the tribes to instruct them in Yahweh's covenant. You see, every one of these cities in which the Levites dwelt became a place of covenant instruction. And I think likely also some informal worship, certainly not the sacrificial worship that was at the tabernacle, but the Levites were trained to teach the people the law, and they were involved in worship. And I think this very well may have been the origin of the synagogue system. Scholars tend to date the synagogue system to originating during the time of the Babylonian exile, because at that point they were separated from the temple, and so they had to come up with some worship system that was not centered on the sacrifice and the temple itself. But the Levites had always dwelt among the tribes as teachers of the law, and again, likely, as local worship leaders. And so I believe that looking at comparing Scripture to Scripture, that it's quite likely that on each Sabbath day in those cities, the Levites engaged in teaching the law and leading the people in less formal worship than that that took place at the temple. Through the Levites, the Lord provided for the spiritual nurture of his people. And after the list of the cities, which we're not reading, we come to a summary statement in verses 41 and 42. All the cities of the Levites within the possession of the children of Israel were 48 cities with their common lands. Every one of these cities had its common land surrounding it. Thus were all these cities. And that brings us to our final point tonight, and that is that Yahweh is shown to be faithful. Listen to the concluding verses. It's the concluding verses of this chapter, but also the conclusion of the whole section that began in chapter 13 about the distribution of the land. So this is really a summary to a big chunk of the book of Joshua. So Yahweh gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. Yahweh gave them rest all around, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers. And not a man of all their enemies stood against them. Yahweh delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word failed of any good thing which Yahweh had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. Commentator Ralph Davis calls these verses the theological heart of the book of Joshua and the jugular vein of the book. And there are two ways that Yahweh has shown himself faithful to his people. He's given them the promised land, verse 43, and he's given them rest from their enemies in verse 44. And one scholar suggests that those dual provisions of Yahweh really summarize everything that's gone before in the book. The provision of the land summarizes chapters 13 through 21. And rest from enemies summarizes the victories and the conquest of chapters 1 through 12. And over both of these marvelous realities stands the statement of verse 45, "Not a word failed of any good thing which Yahweh had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass." Now we must admit that the book of Joshua is slow reading in parts, including all the details about the allocation of the land. But these parts, with all their details, were most precious to the Israelites because they revealed God's covenant faithfulness to the promises that he made to the patriarchs and that he made to Moses. Neither the forces of Pharaoh, nor those of Sihon or Og or the Canaanites could frustrate God's plan to bless his people just as he had promised. Nor could the sins of Israel bring an end to God's covenant with her. In all things, the Lord prevailed in absolute faithfulness. And brothers and sisters, this same faithful God has revealed himself to us in Jesus, in whom we are told all the promises of God are yes and amen. So let us be encouraged by this sacred history. Let us be motivated to go to God in prayer, calling on him to be faithful to the promises that he has given to us. And let us rejoice in his daily provision for us now, even as we joyfully anticipate the final rest that will be ours when we inherit not just the land, but the earth, and enter into the eternal Sabbath when Christ comes again.